First of all, let me explain. Today is Friday. On Friday, in my office is casual day. I make no exceptions. Regardless of where I'm going or what I'm doing on a Friday, I dress casual. So I thought, University of Minnesota, that's loyalty and casual all at once. Second thing I'd like to say after the good afternoon is, with all you news directors, as I look out and all the reporters and media people here in this room today, I'll assume that we're on the record. Unless you tell me otherwise. I don't know if you're aware or not, but it's been stated that I recently came out with a new book called Do I Stand Alone? Going to the Mat Against Political Pawns and Media Jackals. Well, I had another name other than Jackal that was the original title of the book, but it came back to the publisher that if we used the other name, it would never be displayed in any stores. And so naturally, publishers are out to sell books, so they made us reconsider and we changed the name to a far more, I think, illustrious term like Jackal. That can be displayed. Go ahead, you can laugh. Come on. Come on, come on, come on. You know. On a serious note, the book deals, of course, with the country's two political parties, and it deals also with the media. But I think it more so deals with a wake-up call for the citizens of the United States of America that we're getting what we're getting because we as citizens are allowing it. We're getting the two-party system because that's what we're allowing to have happen today. Only two choices. We don't seem to rise up and demand anything more, a third or a fourth or a fifth choice at all. We seem content with only two choices. Well, I'm not content with only two choices. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book. And we also seem to accept a news media that is more interested in entertaining rather than reporting factual at all the times. And in the book, I deal with some of the problems that I feel are shared by both the public and the media today. And in fact, I'll give you an example of exactly what I'm talking about. A few months ago, I went out to testify in front of the House Ways and Means Committee in Washington on opening trade with China. Now, this is something that will affect literally every Minnesotan in some way, shape, or form, if not every person in the United States of America in some way, shape, or form, with our economic future going into this new century. I was honored that the President of the United States asked me to take the lead, take the forefront on getting this initiative passed, opening trade with China, 20% of the world's population. Well, I left during a legislative session here in Minnesota. Our legislature was in session for one day in Washington to testify. Well, first of all, I took criticism for leaving and going to Washington during a session. I don't know why. We live in a modern age of technology. I had no less than 4 cell phones with me at all times. So communication was there. Whether I was at my home in Maple Grove or out in Washington, it didn't present a great problem. Plus, you can fly to Washington in a matter of hours. You can get back in a matter of a few hours. The point I'm getting to, though, is when I went out to do what I considered testimony that right now in my life and term as governor has probably been one of the most important things I've done that will affect the entire nation. This testimony of opening trade to China. Well, the media really didn't want to cover it. They all hired stringers, except I'll add Mr. Hubbard's station. We'll get that one in there for you, Stanley. They sent a crew, but they were the only one. The rest hired stringers. We all know what stringers are. It's kind of like a pinch hitter, or you hire someone that's going to go there, set up a camera, and not really care one way or the other what happens, I guess. I don't know. But that's what happened when I went to Washington to testify. Now, a month or two later, I go out to do a cameo appearance on The Young and the Restless, something that literally affects no Minnesotan. unless they're a fan of the show and are out to be entertained for that particular day, as I am. It affects nobody in the United States of America, except in an entertainment value, and it certainly is not going to affect anyone worldwide, like opening up trade to China would affect the entire world. Wow. We had so much media coverage for The Young and the Restless that we had to bring them in three shifts. One shift of media, when they were done, we moved them out. A second shift of media, they went out. A third shift of media, they went out. Now, do you kind of get my point? Is a bell going off? Yes, it's sexier to cover the entertainment end. Yes, you're in the business of making money. But if that's the way it is, be truthful about it. Tell the people, we're in the business of making money. We prefer pizzazz stories rather than what I call meat and potato stories that tend to get a little more boring, but affect far more people in an everyday life. And that's really what the book's about. It's a call to the American public to hold the media accountable, to let them know that you are with it, that we, the people, the citizens, want to know those boring meat and potato issues, and to take it that step beyond entertaining us. If we want to be entertained, there's hundreds of sitcoms and sports is on all weekend. We want to be informed. Stick to informing us rather than entertaining us. One of the reasons I decided to speak here today is because I hear that one of my former employers is accepting award today. I worked for Hubbard Broadcasting and had a great memory of doing so at KSTP AM Radio. Who wouldn't want to work where you get to get up at 4 in the morning? Who wouldn't want that challenge day to day when I was still a mayor at the time, and needless to say, a disruptive one. And I would go to council meetings on Monday night, and many of them would go long into the night because I wanted to win. And I was outnumbered at the council table, but fortunately, all the council people were a lot older than I was. So I thought, how do you win? You win through attrition. You keep them here till all hours of the night, till they finally can't take it anymore. They'll vote for anything just to go home. Well, in my case, it was keep them there till 3:30, 4 in the morning, and then don't bother going home. Go to work. And there were many times I would arrive at KSTP AM having been up all night at a council meeting and heading straight into work that day. But I really and truly enjoyed it. Thank you, Mr. Hubbard, for the opportunity of getting a chance to venture into a new realm in my life at the time, talk radio, which I think it only served to help me take another step then into politics, because I generally only lasted a job for about 4 years. So I'm perfect for the political system. 4 years, on to the next job, here we go. Which very well could happen here, I don't know, or not. But let me say for a moment about Stanley Hubbard. Stanley Hubbard's an icon here in the state of Minnesota. He's been in the radio television business literally his whole life. He's committed to it, his family is committed to it, and they've done a great job here in the Twin Cities. And I've always admired Stanley because I see Stanley a little bit and I see myself in some ways. Someone willing to take a gamble, someone willing to take a chance, someone willing to go, quote, out of the box a little bit to achieve success. And I think Stanley Hubbard is one of those people who is not going to be set in doing business the normal way it's always been done. I think it's gone to his children too, have been gamblers. They're willing to take that chance. They're willing to go out there and enjoy life, enjoy business, and do it in a great innovative way, which Stanley Hubbard has done. So congratulations, Stanley, to your honor today. It is greatly deserved as a leader here in the state of Minnesota, as you always will be. And I will say one thing that was very interesting. I got to tell a personal Stanley story. and he's probably grinding his teeth as he sits here right now, wondering, uh-oh, what's he going to talk about? Well, it was a case of during the campaign one day, I got a donation from Stanley, and it was a substantial one, and I was greatly honored. And then I was involved in the debates, and one particular debate was a Friday night, fall evening, of which I continued to coach football. All through the campaign, my campaign staff said, you got to quit coaching football. I said, why? They said, well, we need you to campaign. I said, well, Friday nights I'm in front of 8,000 people different every Friday. If you can put me in front of 8,000 different people every Friday, I'll stop coaching football. Well, needless to say, they couldn't do it. Now you're wondering, where does Stanley play into this? Well, I had done one or two debates at the time, and I had come on like the formal candidate should, in the beautiful suit with the tie, the whole thing. Well, this was Friday night, and even though I was debating, I kept my mind focused on the debate. My heart was somewhere else. My heart was at Champlain Park because we were playing Anoka, our cross the river rival that night. And so I went to the debate dressed in a warm-up suit, a sweatshirt, because I was leaving as soon as that debate was over and going back to my football game. Well, lo and behold, about 24 hours after that debate, I got a call from Stanley, and Stanley chewed me out. He could do that then. I wasn't governor. I was only a candidate then. See, now I'm governor. Now he's got to be more careful chewing me out or not. But he chewed me out up and down, and he says, you can win this thing, Jesse Ventura, but you can't go to debates dressed in an athletic warm-up suit. And I said, note taken, Stanley, but remember, I had to coach, and I will coach, and regardless, I'm so unorthodox. I think, really, I was right and Stanley was wrong that night, and I'll tell you why. I won this election because I was unorthodox and because I showed people I will walk into an affair dressed in a sweatshirt, wearing blue jeans, because that's who I am, and that's honestly who I am. But I did appreciate the criticism from Mr. Hubbard, and I took it with the grain of salt that it deserved, absolutely. From a man of his stature, who I've never seen not wearing a suit. But I do want to say, Stanley, it did get me one of the gravest insults I've ever had in my life. Myself and my security were out in L.A. one day, and I was dressed in these suits that Stanley likes to see me wear. And we were in an elevator, and there were about seven of us in there, all my security, the California security, myself. And the doors opened up, and there was kind of a young, couple years out of college girl standing there wearing jeans, this and that. And she kind of looked into the elevator, wouldn't get in, and with total disdain said, ooh, an elevator full of suits. And that's the worst insult I've had in my life to this day. Because never in my life did I want to be called a suit. So anyway, again, congratulations to Stanley Hubbard. You've made an excellent choice for your award. And I want to also wish you good luck on your new station, 45. Good luck to that. New station here in town. And to the members of the RTNDA, don't take the things I've said today too harshly. Matter of fact, I enjoy a good battle. So keep firing at me. I like it. Makes me feel good because I'm a warrior at heart, and today I have to fight the war of the verbal war today. But I enjoy it. Keep us on our toes. Keep us accountable. But by the same token, keep yourselves accountable. Go home occasionally and look into the mirror and say, did I do the job that I was supposed to do, or did I turn into a fluff journalist of whatever you want to call it? Did I educate the people of this country, or did I simply entertain them? There's a difference. Thank you very, very much.